Hey everybody, what's going on?
Yeah, Monday.
I see that Bee's Nest changed his name to Murder Hornet's Nest.
Yeah. He's mad.
Murder Hornet's Nest.
He's light on cash. He's getting mad. Where's that money?
Well, like I said, it's almost Christmas. I'm light on cash, man. Too. And we just moved, not too long ago, so I'm still, kind of broke from that.
And I may have to fucking close this house this month if they fucking start pressuring me. So we have to see.
We paid
fucking the rent.
Yeah.
So the longer we're paying rent, the more money we're flushing down the toilet. It's better if we get that on the damn mortgage.
That's
so
true.
You know how it is.
Yeah, well.
Try to get some equity in the house.
Equity.
Yeah. See if everybody's in. They're all starting to show up. Got Louis Hernandez is in. So we're going to talk about Rock and Roll.
Fucking love this movie.
It's pretty good.
I love this movie.
And you can watch it. You can watch it free on YouTube. And it's the publisher that actually put it up because it.
You can't get it anywhere.
You can't get it anywhere else. There's some kind of a problem with, I don't know, the ownership of it. They own it, but they can't market it or something.
I'll kind of get into that because it's really kind of shitty what happened to this poor little movie. Because this movie's fucking rad. I saw it a bunch on cable back in the 80s, in the mid to late 80s.
It's like a big, long music video of fucking real cool 80s bands that has a story, and it's animated, and the main characters are rats. But they look like humans. They look like humans with little brown noses.
And there's a reason for that. If you think about it, really, the story, it doesn't have to be post-apocalyptic. It doesn't have to be, humanoid rats or anything. But there's a reason why it came about that way, too.
It's kind of a rock opera.
Yeah, like I said, I kind of feel like this was on Cinemax or HBO or something like that a bunch back in the day. It came out in 1983, although they started working on it in 1978, so it took a really long time to come to fruition. It's actually Canadian. It was done by Nelvana, which prior to that, they had only done kind of kids cartoons and stuff. And this movie, by the way, if you're not in the U.S., this movie is actually called Ring of Power. So that might be why, so if you're in another country and you want to see it, it might be under that title instead. It's called Rock and Roll in the U.S. and I'm pretty sure in Canada as well, which is where it came from.
All-star cast with the music.
I mean...
Blondie.
Yeah, Debbie Harry does songs for it. Lou Reed, Iggy Pop, Cheap Trick, Earth, Wind & Fire... just a great, and sadly, again, there was no soundtrack album, and most of the songs have not been released officially.
And they're good, real good.
Yeah, I think the three Cheap Trick songs came out on some box set that they did a few years back. The Iggy Pop song that's on there, which I think is called Pain and Suffering, that didn't come out until 2019, as an extra track on something that had been remastered. Angel's song... The Debbie Harry one, she actually kind of rewrote that a little bit, changed the lyrics a little bit, and did another version of it for her album Deaf, Dumb, and Blonde, which came out in the 90s, I think. But other than that, the other songs I don't think got released, and that's, really shitty. Because, the Lou Reed ones were actually really good. They're all good. All the songs are good.
Yeah, the Blondie songs are, hits. They're fucking really good. I've never heard them before. I was like, where the hell? Why don't I know this song? And it's because it's only for this movie. But she re-released it later, but I think it was different.
It was a different version.
Different version.
It had a different title.
Yeah.
I think it was, I can't remember what the title was, but she changed the title. Yeah, Oracle pointed out, Nelvana did an interesting take on The Devil and Daniel Webster, or Faust, where the heroes were Dan and Jan, who were mice as well as musicians. And I was going to say that that is actually where the germ of the idea for this movie came about. It actually came, it's called The Devil and Daniel Mouse. And it was essentially a Faustian story about a band of humanoid mice or animated mice. And one of them makes a deal with the devil to be a famous rock star. It was made for kids. They had a coloring book that went along with it and everything like that. Interestingly, and I just found this out today and this kind of blew my mind. Do you remember the Bauhaus song Party of the First Part?
Yeah, I remember
it. It was just an instrumental and it had kind of it sounded like film dialogue of somebody It's from that cartoon. That's where that sample came from, which I didn't actually realize. I knew it was from a movie or a show or something, but I had never heard it before. But that's where it comes from.
Okay.
So when they first conceived this movie, back in 1978, 1979, whenever it was, as I said, Nelvana as a studio, I think they'd done like Care Bears and that kind of shit. So they did like kid stuff. And this movie was originally supposed to be a kid's movie too. It was originally called Drats. And it was about, it was the same thing. It was post-apocalyptic. It was a band of, you know, after the apocalypse and rats and cats and stuff like that had evolved back into humans.
Yeah.
And it was about a band and everything like that. But as time went on and more adult cartoons started to sort of come to the fore, like Heavy Metal and, yeah. you know, some the Ralph Bakshi stuff, some of the people in Hollywood were like, well, why don't you make it more adult oriented? Right. So they started going more in that direction.
Yeah, you were talking about that this is for kids, and I was like, yeah, it is kind of, but the tone is more like Heavy Metal.
Yeah, just it's not as
the sexual element.
It's not as sleazy as Heavy Metal, but there is swearing in it. Yeah. There is violence in it. There is like some, I guess, like the character of Angel is a little bit sexualized, but it's not really till the end, and it's not really. It's not, there's not nudity or anything like that, but there is, you know, bad language and violence and things like that. So it's not really, I don't think it's going to traumatize a kid for life or anything like that, but it's probably not.
It's like an adult team, a teen theme.
Yeah, it's not super, it's not really geared toward kids.
Yeah, not as say, perverse as the Heavy Metal.
No.
The first one.
Not by a long shot.
Which I wouldn't call Heavy Metal perverse, it's just. Can get kind of raunchy.
Yeah, it's raunchy.
Yeah.
So this is adult-oriented, but not raunchy.
Yeah.
It just does have adult themes to it, I guess. But yeah, so kind of all that happened, and it just kind of evolved more into a more adult story, I suppose. Now, interestingly, there are actually two versions of this. The original Canadian version, one doesn't have... I think we were talking about this one in some other movies. I don't know what it is about American film distributors. This movie, actually, to be distributed in the U.S., it was picked up by MGM, like United Artists. They picked it up for distribution, but then they were like, meh, and they didn't really release it. I think it was maybe... I don't even know if they released it in theaters. It might have gone right to VHS, or if it did that, because it only ended up making like $30,000 in the U.S. and Canada. So it's like they didn't even bother releasing it; like they just threw it on a shelf somewhere, which seems really weird. But the American version, they had to put kind of a title card at the beginning with a little bit of narration explaining that it was post-apocalyptic and that street animals like rats and stuff had evolved back into humans. So this is like in the future. Whereas, like I said, the Canadian one didn't have that, and it doesn't really need that. I mean, you'll figure it out. I think I did read like one contemporary critic that was like, "Why do all the characters look like they have dog faces?" You know what I mean? But they're rats. That's why they're all rats. And the reason that they are all rats was because the original idea they were all mice. So you know, there you go. So the Canadian version doesn't have that. You know, the explanation. And the Canadian version also has a different guy voicing Omar. The voice was done by Greg Salata in Canada, but for whatever reason, the American distribution, I've actually never heard the Canadian version because the American distributors are like, well, we want an American actor that has more name recognition. So they got Paul LaMatte, who had been in American Graffiti. He was in The Burning Bed. He was in the Puppet Master movies. So he was kind of more of a name. So they got him to redub all of Omar's stuff. The other voices they kept the same. But I have to say, one of my favorite things about this, well, like I said, I've seen this movie probably a million times. I saw it on cable. I recorded it. And every now and then, I'm just kind of like, man, I want to watch Rock and Roll again. It's just, it's so good. It's a crime what happened to it, distribution, because it just disappeared. Even nowadays, it is a bitch to get hold of. You can watch it, you know, you can watch it on YouTube for free, which is good. But if you want like a real fancy
high-res
copy of it and all this other stuff, they did one back in 2005 that actually had the Devil and Daniel Mouse on it and some behind-the-scenes shit, but it went out of print. So you can't. I don't think you can get any more. If you can, it's really, really expensive.
It's going to be something used collector's item.
Yeah, which that's really shitty. And I just kind of feel like for a long time, people were like selling bootlegs of this at conventions and stuff because you just couldn't get it.
Yeah.
And people were like, man, it's so sad because it's really, really good and nobody really talked about it. But other than like the soundtrack for this being amazing, all the songs are amazing. The story is cool. My favorite thing about this is Don Franks doing the voice of Mach, the bad guy. Don Franks, he did a lot of, if you go to his Wikipedia page, he's done like a zillion things. Not just voice work, he does a lot of voice work. I didn't realize that was the same guy that played the sheriff in the original My Bloody Valentine. I didn't recognize his voice. He is so great as the villain. The villain's name is actually Mach Swagger. So he's supposed to be like Mick Jagger, but
yeah.
He's kind of David Bowie-ish, too. And his singing voice is Lou Reed, mostly. But, so the story about this, they're all rat people. Like I said, it doesn't matter, but it's post-apocalyptic. So there's this little town, like some dinky shithole town called Ohmtown, whose one claim to fame is this big, like a power plant. Now, there's this band there comprised of four people, which is Angel, Omar, Stretch, and Dizzy. And they're kind of on the shitty Ohmtown circuit. Like, they're playing at the beginning in this club, and there's, like, two people there watching them. And they get cut off in the middle because, like, you know, they just suck or whatever. It's just like an open mic night or talent night or something like that. Now, meanwhile, the bad guy, Mach, is sort of this... He's a rock star, but he's also like a magician. He's a Mach the Magic Man, that's what they call him. And he's sort of like still popular and legendary, but kind of his star is fading a little bit, I guess, because he says something like, oh, my last concert was not completely sold out. You know what I mean? So he's kind of on the downward slope. So one thing he's decided he wants to do, as one does, is... summon a demon from another dimension. It's very Lovecraftian. That is pretty much going to wipe out the Earth because he wants to get back at everybody for not loving him anymore, pretty much. And for the spell to work, he needs this one specific voice. Like, it's a sound frequency that will open the door to bring the demon into the dimension and destroy the world, right? So it will surprise no one to find out that Mach has been doing this talent search, quote unquote, looking for this voice that will do it. And it turns out that it's Angel's voice that will bring the demon. Now, she doesn't know this, obviously. So Mach first tries to like sweet talk her into, hey, come join me. Leave these losers behind. You're just going to be on this crappy Ohmtown circuit for the rest of your life. I'm going to take you to New York, which is what they call New York now, obviously. And, you know, you'll be a big star and everything. And she doesn't really want to do it. So then he decides he's going to take her by force. And there's kind of all this other stuff going on where he makes Omar think that she went of her own volition. So he's basically like, fuck that bitch. Because there's kind of a thing about... him not really wanting to share the spotlight in the band with her. Like, they have a big argument at the beginning. Like, he wants to do his song, she wants to do her song, and she kind of takes over from him, and he gets mad, and they have this big thing. So that's how it goes on. But they eventually, like, get to a thing where they have to go and save her from Mach and, you know, stop the demon from coming out of the dimension. So that's where the story is. So it's kind of like a sci-fi fantasy type story. I don't know if I really want to spoil it, but I will say...
Yeah, because it's almost like a new movie. Almost people really don't see it.
Yeah,
because
I feel like I don't know. It's just... It's really... It's one of those ones that just very, very sadly, like, fell through the cracks.
If you liked heavy metal, the first one, you'd like this. It's in that same spirit.
Yeah, and honestly, the animation for this... They had 300 animators working on this. They spent so much time and money working on this that it almost bankrupted the studio.
Yeah. It's more of a rock new wave angle. It doesn't have not much metal in it. 80s. It's good. You know, it's good. It's got its own tone. It's neat, you know.
Yeah, and as I said,
it does not have a horror angle.
No, like, not really.
Like heavy metal had. Just slightly sci-fi, post-apocalyptic kind of.
But as I mentioned, it's almost like it doesn't have to have been post-apocalyptic.
This could be happening in
It could be happening anywhere. It doesn't really matter.
Anywhere in the 80s. Yeah.
You know, but the fact that it is post, that kind of gives the, like, the backgrounds, like, a little bit of a Blade Runner-y kind of shit.
Yeah, and the story kind of like Phantom of the Paradise a little bit.
It is, actually.
It's a rock opera. It's a bunch of different rock groups in conflict and working together and whatever. The music industry. Got that kind of a fucking...
But I will say that it didn't use... Because I kind of feel like heavy metal has its own kind of look to it, where they use a lot of rotoscoping and stuff.
Yeah.
I think they used some rotoscoping in this, but it took so long, like, to work on this that a lot of it is, like, traditional cell animation, and they used, like, some early computer graphics, one of the first animated movies to do that, as far as I am aware. And it actually... for the time period, the animation in this is really nice.
Yeah.
It really, really looks like they took some time with it, and it looks really, really good.
Animation was almost kind of like on par with Akira. If you remember, see Akira?
Yeah.
The Japanese anime, it was kind of like that, but American. Maybe that's not a good comparison. But, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, Mike Barrett said apocalyptic movies are hit and miss with me. Yeah, this, like I said, this is a post-apocalyptic, but it doesn't have to be. It doesn't really factor into the story all that much.
Yeah, they're in the future. They're rats. They've evolved into humans.
But it's still just like a human story.
It's like in the human world.
Yeah, I mean, it might as well be. There's nothing.
The 80s.
There's
yeah.
nothing different.
Yeah.
Other than everybody looking kind of like rat-faced and having big like mouse ears.
Yeah, they're not ugly though.
No, yeah, it's kind of like...
You could say they look like mice, too.
Well, as I said, if you...
probably originally
if
mice.
You see... Yeah, if you see the Devil and Daniel Mouse, they looked more like mice.
Yeah.
But the more that they went more in an adult direction, in a sci-fi fantasy direction, and less in a kid's direction, they made them look more human. So basically, most of the characters look like humans, except they kind of have muzzles a little bit. You know?
Yeah, so you're in the future, post-apocalyptic future, where everybody's rats, but it's almost kind of like cyberpunk, the way things look, of the 80s.
Yeah, and Mike Barrett also says, Heavy Metal 1983. Although that was 81, wasn't it, Heavy Metal?
I don't know.
I thought that came out in 81. Maybe it was 83. I didn't care for. Yeah, this, but like I said, this one is not, one, this one's not an anthology. This one is just like one regular story.
Yeah.
And I don't want to oversell too much, like saying, oh, it's just like Heavy Metal, because it's not. I mean, tonally, it's not like Heavy Metal, and it's not as sleazy as Heavy Metal. Honestly, I like Rock and Rule better than Heavy Metal, but that's just me. I don't know. Heavy Metal is good, but I just, some of the stories I like and some of them I don't, so it seems a little more inconsistent.
Yeah.
This one, I just like the idea behind it. I like the whole story angle. I like the demonic, like, Lovecraftian thing. I like the visuals. I like all the character work. All the voice acting is really, really good, especially Don Franks, who plays the villain. He's just, I mean, he steals, like, pretty much every scene that he's in. I mean, just, he's so... he's so evil and like over the top, but he's also like really kind of charming. He has like this really gravelly kind of voice that's kind of seductive at the same time, but it's just like, it's a really, really good performance. So I don't want to say those two things are too similar, but I don't know. It's a similar vibe. I feel like if you liked Heavy Metal, you probably like this as well, even though, like I said, it's not as raunchy, but it's not a kid's movie either, you know? Because I've liked some kid-directed animation, too, like Secret of Nim. I'm really into that. And actually, I just rewatched that a few months ago, and I still liked it, that's definitely a kid's movie. This one is a lot more adult than that, but it's not as sleazy as Heavy Metal is.
Yeah, Heavy Metal came out in 81.
Yeah, I thought it was 81.
Yeah. I don't know. Is there a 1983 version?
Not that I know of. There's just an 81, that was the original one, and then there was the 2000 one, which we talked about yesterday.
Yeah, no, there is no 83.
Yeah, so it was 81. Maybe he just got confused because this movie came out in 83. Although, as I said, they started working on this one back in the late 70s. It just took that long to get it off the ground. Oracle said, I think they also did a movie called Halloween Witch Magic, also aimed at the kid market, but it's kind of trippy. Oh, now I kind of want to watch that. Yeah, it really, I read the synopsis because I haven't seen Devil and Daniel Mouse, but I read the synopsis of it on Wikipedia. And knowing that that weird, sample from the Bauhaus song was taken from that, I'm like, that, I totally would not have guessed that that was a kid's cartoon. It really doesn't sound, it doesn't sound like a kid's cartoon. So I guess they were doing more, maybe Canada, man. I feel like you could get away with doing devil shit in kids' movies back then. I don't think you could have gotten away with that in the United States, not in the 80s. Because everybody'd be like, Satan! Mm-hmm. Oh my God! Everybody'd be like flipping out about it. But Canada's just like, whatever. They're mice and they're making a deal with the devil. It's fine. It's for children. Mm-hmm. Oracle says, Halloween witch magic involves kids getting the local witch to turn them into monsters for trick-or-treating purposes. Oh, now I have to see that. That's a great idea. To get them turned into like real monsters. It's like, fuck these fake ass costumes. We want to be real monsters for the holiday and like scare everybody to death. That'd be like super cool. But yeah, I mean, honestly, every song in this, I love every single song in this. I love all the characters in this. I mean, my favorite one, what?
Oh, I'm showing what they look like.
Oh, okay.
They don't quite look like rats. They just.
That's Angel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, see, they mostly just have like kind of mousy noses, like rat noses.
Yeah.
They don't look like, and they might, do they have tails?
Let me see.
Ooh.
I don't think they did.
I don't think they did.
I don't think they had tails.
I don't think they did. For a second, I was like, no, well, some of them did. I think maybe Mylar, the guy that owns the club, he might have a tail. But he looked a lot more like a rat than some of the other characters did.
She doesn't have a tail.
Yeah. I think Mylar had a tail. Yeah, so they basically just look like people with noses. Oh, Oracle said the Halloween witch magic is on YouTube. Okay, well, I'm going to have to watch that because that sounds like a delightful idea. But, that's Angel and Omar, and that's Mach in the background. So Mach looks even less like, and he has kind of fangs.
Is it focusing?
Yeah, it's kind of.
Yeah.
He's one. Honestly, I think that Mach might be my favorite animated villain of all time. I know that's a bold statement, but I don't know. I just really, really like his character because he's he can do actual magic shit. It seems like, I mean, obviously he can like summon a demon and stuff because it does work. Spoiler alert, but I don't know. He's just such a great. I just love that voice performance, and I just like the way he looks. It's super cool. And like I said, all the music is great. The Lou Reed songs. He does the My Name Is Mach song, and then he does one that's kind of more trippy called Triumph. That's kind of like. That's the one where when Mach gives them what they call the Edison balls, it's supposed to be like drugs. It like hypnotizes them. And that's kind of the song that's playing. So it's like this really trippy kind of song like that. But I think, I don't know, the Debbie Harry ones are really, really good. I think the song Send Love Through, which they do, she does it at the beginning. And then at the end, they do like a duet, like her and Robin Zander from Cheap Trick. And it's just a great, great song. And I don't think that was ever officially released, which is kind of shitty.
Good look for it.
I mean, you know, like I said, you can watch the movie for free, but it's kind of sad that you can't get a soundtrack because there's such good fucking music in this. Yeah. Even all the Cheap Trick songs are good. And I've never been a huge Cheap Trick fan, but the first one that they do in the club is almost sounds like punk, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Well, Cheap Trick kind of was trying to implement that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, it's kind of a pop version of it. But
Oracle said, sorry, the title is actually Witch's Night Out. Halloween Witch Magic is the theme song. Okay, I'm going to have to, like, watch that. Okay, so Oscar Perez says, shitty movie, great couple and channel, though, so I'm here. Are you talking about this movie? Because
who knows?
I'm going to have to argue with you, sir. I love this movie. I never get sick of this movie, and I've seen it at least 100 times. This is one of those ones that I think I probably have memorized.
Yeah. Oscar comes up with all kinds of crazy shit sometimes, though. He's, oh, that's not a good one. It's a fucking great movie.
I don't understand how you could not like this movie. This movie is a delight from start to finish.
Enjoying a movie a lot of times has to do with whatever fucking state of mind you're in at the time when you're seeing it.
That's true. That's why a lot of times if I see something and I'm kind of like meh about it, but the concept is interesting, I always will try to watch it again.
Go back and
later
you can pick up on it.
Because, you know, a lot of times you appreciate it more the second time. But then if you see it again the second time, you're like, nah, I still don't like it. Then that's fair enough.
Got my Billy Idol Christmas album today.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, it showed up. It's in there. Yeah. You open it up and the inside it's got Billy saying that, yeah, I'm usually the Christmas... when I have Christmas parties, I got to sing all the music at his house. So
He's like, can I just relax and have a Christmas party?
Well,
he's like, no.
It. He said he likes it. So he sings
dance,
all the
monkeys,
music at
dance.
His house. he chose his favorite songs, and he says what he liked about them is that they're challenging to sing. And he just does them straight. But this is from a few years back, and it's been remastered. So the version I have.
I'm very excited about this.
It just came out,
this. I'm excited about Christmas just so I can listen to the Billy Idol Christmas album.
Listen to the Billy Idol album. Billy Idol Christmas. It's called Happy Holidays.
That's original.
Yeah.
He should have called it something like, It's a Nice Day for a White Christmas.
Something like that,
He could have called it that. That would have been funny.
Well, I don't think he was trying to gimmick it up. He wanted to just go, take this.
Just a straight
It's a serious Christmas album, right? Yeah, with him on tug going,
because he's always kind of make that face. He's like, this is, patent pending.
But no, he doesn't fucking Billy Idol them up or anything. It's just, almost sounds like Bing Crosby singing it.
Well, you got to respect that. Honestly, I really liked the ones that I heard.
Yeah, he does it classic.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. But yeah, so if you're into animated movies, if you're into 80s music... and especially like any kind of retro old days MTV new wave type stuff, and you haven't seen this, you have to fucking see it. It's just, and please don't tell me you don't like it, that'll just make me cry, because I love this movie. I really do. I love it a lot. And
I just encourage them to
I know now I'm just gonna be like, you suck.
Yeah.
Because I know how people are, but seriously, I love this movie and it hurts my feelings when other people
they're asking
like
if you're gonna do more giallo reviews.
Yeah, I definitely will. Probably not this. I don't think I'm going to do any more this month because I'm doing all winter movies this month, but I will definitely get back to you. I have so many. I still have to do All the Colors of the Dark. I still have to do House with the Laughing Windows. There's so many that I still have to do. I have this huge, huge list. You guys don't even know. But I will get back to them, I promise. So I guess that's probably it, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, if you want to watch this movie, it's free, and it's legitimately free on YouTube. It's not copyright infringement. As far as I know, I think it's actually the production company that owned it actually put it up there because it wasn't available elsewhere. Back in the old days, you had to actually write to Nelvana and go, hey, make me a copy, and they charged you $80, and they sent you a VHS copy. Because
cool.
They had to do... Now, sadly, the original print of this movie apparently got destroyed in a fire. So the ones they have now were just, they duped off a VHS, but it actually still looks pretty good. The one that's on YouTube, it doesn't look shitty or muddy or anything.
It's too bad they didn't have a Laserdisc.
I know.
You guys don't know how good Laserdisc looked. It looked so much better than DVD. It looked better than Blu-ray from the way I remembered it. And that was on those old CRT televisions. But some of the definitions started to get better on those CRT televisions. I wonder what a Laserdisc looks like now on a digital TV.
I don't know. Ask the dude from
they were the size of a record album.
Yeah, I remember.
Looking great, man.
I worked in a record store in 1993, and we sold. Although it never got really popular.
They're expensive.
Yeah, I think we had like two little bins full of laser discs, and I don't think the whole time I worked there, I don't think I saw a single person buy one.
I saw Star Wars, the first one, on fucking laser disc. Blew my fucking mind. It's like seeing it in the movie theater. And Excalibur also saw it on Laserdisc. A friend of mine had a Laserdisc. It was just, man.
I don't think I've ever seen anything on Laserdisc.
What made it look good is part of it is that in those days, the Laserdisc players and the televisions and everything. They were thousands and thousands of dollars. They were big, and they had great audio. So the speakers were fucking great. It was like you're in a theater. Hmm. I think it was like fucking a $6,000 system.
Oracle said, we have two Laserdisc players because my husband has the Bond 007 collection on Laserdisc, among others.
Okay. Yeah. Do you put can you put them on a modern television? I guess you can. You can convert the signal, probably find a way to plug it.
Well, yeah. Like I said, the James from Cinemassacre, he has a Laserdisc player. Oh, and Oliver Harper has one too. Yeah. Cuz he really likes Laserdiscs. So he has like a shit ton of them. Like one from Japan and stuff. I never, well, you know, I couldn't afford it, obviously.
Yeah, that was rich people shit.
That was rich people shit.
VHS was expensive.
Yeah.
During that time. That was rich people shit. Laserdisc was even more.
If you wanted to buy a movie,
it was $100, yeah.
Yeah, they were like $100. That's why everybody rented them for a long time. That's why there was such a big like video store thing, because it was like, well, shit, I can't afford to pay $100 for a VHS of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, much as I wanted to. But, you know, you could rent it for $3 or $4 for a night or two. Oracle said, don't ask me how it works. It involved a lot of swearing from my husband to set it up. Trey says, this is another one I've been meaning to watch for years. Missed it back in the day. You should watch it. It's on YouTube for free. Watch it. It's super fun. I love this movie. And I love all the music from it. And I love the villain. I just love everything about it. I've seen it a million times, and I just never get sick of it. I even wrote a big, long blog post about it a couple years back. But, you know, it's just, it's really fun. And it's free. So go watch it and tell me what you think of it. But don't tell me if you don't like it, because I'll cry. Just kidding. All right, so that's all we have to say for about this, right?
Yep.
All right, so we'll be back again. Should we do another animated movie and just make it a threefer?
We can do it.
I can't think of another one. Well,
we'll find something.
We'll find something. Cause
we can do Fell a Day or some shit like that.
Oh my God, that one's so messed up.
Or Watership Down.
Oh, yeah.
That's on for free.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. We should do that then. Okay, yeah, we'll do Watership Down tomorrow. That'll be fun. I haven't seen that in a long time. I read the book, too. There's also, The Plague Dogs, which was kind of a similar theme. That is also free, because I think that's on Tubi. Because I've been meaning to, like, watch that one, too. So, yeah. We'll do that one tomorrow. Talk about the scary, bloody bunnies. All right. So, thanks, everybody, for dropping by, and we will see you guys again tomorrow.